Well, hello there to our automotive enthusiast friends all around the planet Earth. No matter what time of day, what time zone, doesn't matter. Because you've pushed the button on yet another...
Kevin, another money-back guaranteed episode of V8 Radio.
Money-back guaranteed. So I guess we're guaranteed to return nothing.
Correctamundo. Free and worth every penny.
Nice. Again, the free and worth it concept courtesy of our friends at the Round 6 podcast.
That's right.
I saw several of our Round 6 friends at the... Grand National Roadster Show just a few weeks ago.
Oh, right on. Cool. Yeah, yeah.
So, yes, this is the V8 Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Oste, joined as always by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Ubal-Clark.
Yes, sir. And we are back in the studio again.
We've been getting a lot of these episodes out recently.
We have been. It's been great. We had a bit of a dry period there where people were kind of knocking on the door saying, hey, what's going on?
Hey, stay down.
Stay down. I thank you, sir.
That's right. You know, the less of these we do, the more people's inboxes get filled with TED Talks. So there's that.
Good point.
Yeah. Well, for those who did decide to tune back in, we welcome you. Thanks for joining us. And as you probably already know, we start every V8 Radio episode off with an automotive trivia question.
We do indeed. All right, let's let her rip.
Oh boy.
All right, Kevin, in what mythical city that's said to be filled with gold did Cadillac name a car model after for its golden anniversary?
Hmm. Well, the mythical city, it certainly wasn't XLR, because that's not a city.
It was not. I'll give you that.
Yes. Interesting that you have this question. So, could it possibly be El Dorado?
Well, now, Kevin, I don't know.
I mean, I don't know that there's a Cadillac Metropolis, you know, although mm-hmm. Metropolis is a real city.
It is a real city, yeah. In Illinois.
There's one not far from here.
Mm-hmm. Could it be the Cadillac Gotham City, perhaps?
Cadillac Goth. It wouldn't be so bad.
No, it wouldn't be so bad.
That's my final answer.
All right. Duly noted, sir. The Cadillac El Dorado.
There you go. All right. I've got one for you. I don't know that this was a repeat because last time you spun the wheel, right?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
And I think the last one was, what was the GMC branded tilt wheel called?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So then the other one remains. Mm-hmm. So you can spin the wheel if you want, but it's only got one.
All right, door number two then.
All right. What, according to the Internet Movie Car Database, what is the most popular car in film?
Ooh, there have been many, many cars on film, mm-hmm. many car movies. By God, the first car that comes to mind is the Bluesmobile. Was that a 1974 Dodge Monaco? Thank you.
Yeah.
Gosh, you have the Batmobile. You have the it's just movies, correct? Not TV.
Well, let me make sure the question is clear. The most popular appearing car.
Most popular appearing car. So the car that people like the most that appeared on film. Is that how I'm reading that?
That is a different question.
Oh.
It's got nothing to do with...
Oh, what's appeared the most.
There you go. It's got nothing to do with what people like.
I understand. Okay.
It's the most popular car.
Most popular car.
In movies.
Well, that's a whole different ballgame now, isn't it? Oh, boy.
I already swung down and pulled you out of that one.
You did. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. That's unlike you. It's uncharacteristic.
Well, I want to hear
you. Let me swing in the breeze for a while.
I want to hear what you're going to guess on this.
Yeah. Okay. Most popular appearing car in movies. We are going to go, well, there have been a bunch of Batman movies made, so I'm gonna go with the Batmobile.
Still,
Batmobile. Final answer.
Wow. All right. Definitive.
Definitive.
Q says the Batmobile.
Batmobile.
You know, most bats fly. They don't need mobiles.
True. This one does.
Yeah. So there you go. All right. Just because any particular... generation of Batmobile?
Well, I mean, the one that was on TV is my favorite, of course, and from the 60s. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen the ones that were in the latest, like the Batman Begins movies with Christian. You know who I'm talking about.
Sister Christian.
Yeah, him too. I didn't really dig that one, but I think it probably appeared more than others. So, okay.
So
you know.
We're just going to say the first.
We're just going to the first, yeah.
All right. Okay. Duly noted.
Dig it.
And we'll reveal the answer to these riveting trivia questions at the end of the show.
I can't wait.
Yeah, me neither. So you're coming off of another visit here on site at the V8 Speed and Wrestler Shop because you, as a team member, you work remotely.
Yes, I do. I do. Yeah, I come down at least once a month for a few days to kind of get reacquainted with everybody out here. And, you know, I like to see people, you know, person to person. And it's just a whole different vibe, and I dig it. And you really get to literally get your hands on things. And I feel pretty productive when I come down here.
It's okay to feel that way.
Yeah. Oh, ouch. Zing.
I try to feel productive, but there's always more to do is my point.
Yeah.
So today you were chasing down we have a 68 Camaro in the shop. And it's kind of a late 70s street machine vibe.
Yes, for sure. Big, fat, wide BF Goodrich tires on slotted mags, jacked up in the air, Dana 60 rear end, small block with the gold valve covers, headers, aluminum intake, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, it's pretty right on for that time period.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is.
And the Dana 60 rear end, of course, never came in a Camaro. So,
correct.
And this one had a bad axle bearing.
Yeah, it needs the whole pinion, the whole differential needs to be rebuilt, and found that, you know, we want axle bearings for it as well, just to freshen up everything. So that's been my issue today, is trying to find the proper set of bearings for this thing. There should be some numbers on the axle tubes, but this has ladder bars welded on the axle tube, so any numbers that are on there are pretty much gone.
Mm-hmm.
There's a number on the back of the center section that doesn't give a whole lot of information, but we're just kind of trying to, you know, see what we have and see what we can match it up with.
And of course, the axle ends aren't necessarily right for the housing.
It could be, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot's happened over the years, so.
Well, I know, like, if you spec out a Ford 9-inch, for example, from from Curry or from Mosier, any of those people, you can pick what axle ends you want.
True.
You can go with a GM if you've got GM brakes, if it's going on a Pontiac or something.
That's a great point.
You could do a Ford small bearing or a large bearing or, you know, all kinds of different stuff. So what do you do in this case?
Well, you knock on a lot of doors and just look at what you have and just do a lot of searching, and hopefully you find some kind of identifying number on there that kind of gives you more information to go on. And then from that, you can do a little more searching based on that and try to come up with some gold.
Measure it.
Measure. Yes. Look for any numbers that are on any other bearings. Just try to get as much info as possible.
I think, you were counting axle splines.
I was counting axle splines.
I guess the last resort would be to just remove the bearing from the axle, and then you could physically take that somewhere if you wanted to.
Yes, you could.
You could take that. We have a couple of pretty good, you know, auto parts stores down the street that probably have what you need sitting on the shelf. We all know what it's like to engage some of those people sometimes to want to take on that project, you know. But my concern is always a lot of times those bearings don't really survive the removal process.
Right.
So if the car doesn't roll unless that's on.
Right.
So if we can leave it on the axle as long as possible, we can still slide the axle back in and move the car around.
Sure.
Should we need to. But
yeah, this is a good one.
Yeah.
This is what I'm learning a lot today.
Well, this is the world of old car repair, and especially those that are modified, and whoever did the work is not here.
That's correct.
Whoever built this car was finished a long time ago. So, yep. Well,
I mean, that to really punctuate that point, we have a 35 Ford in the shop right now, and I was looking, we wanted a carb kit for it, so I found a carb kit for a 35 Ford, of course it was the wrong one because of the carburetor that's on it is from like a 45 Ford flathead engine. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I have to get something from something else. And it's just crazy all the iterations that some of these cars go through as they age and as they get to us and all the surprises we find.
Well, and that's why, you know, more often than not, we can't trust what it is by the book.
Yeah.
We have to look at it. And, mm-hmm. and you know, we have people that call us all the time and they're like, yeah, I've got this 67 Camaro or I got whatever. And it's got a small block. So it's a 327 and it's, you know, a Power Glide transmission and whatever. And when it comes in, it's got none of that.
Right.
You know, because that was over 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it might have a, you know, a center bolt second generation small block
Correct.
And metric and
right one piece rear main and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And people order parts for this stuff to fix them, and then this is how you end up with the wrong parts. And it's frustrating because sometimes, you know, customers are like, what do you mean it's the wrong part? It's a small block Chevy.
Well, yeah,
there's more than one.
Yeah, they were around for a long time.
And just because I might think I know what it is by your description on the phone,
right,
what it actually is, you know, oftentimes very different. So there's a lot of give and take, and we have some written procedures pertaining to rear axles specifically whenever it comes to servicing a rear axle. And step one is to identify it like wholeheartedly.
Uh-huh.
And again, you learn the hard way, but we had a person bring in, I believe it was a Chevy product, but it had a Pontiac rear end in it.
Oh boy.
Somebody put in there. So it was, if I have the story right, I think it was like a Chevelle with a GTO rear end.
No kidding.
Kind of thing.
Okay.
Cause they'll interchange physically.
Mm-hmm.
Their control arms and you can swap one out
right.
for the other, but the rear axle was worn. It was making a noise. So customer wanted us to rebuild the differential, put a posi unit, change the gear, put bearings on it,
sure.
and go, right? So you look up what the car is and you order those parts, and then when it comes in, it's like, this isn't 100% wrong. Because yeah. those internally are two yeah. completely different rear axle
right.
assemblies. So then it was, okay, well, we're not going to ever do that again. That was a long time ago, too. But mm-hmm. And I think we had a technician who, you know, just kind of made that assumption. It's like, well,
right.
It's a Chevelle.
Who puts a GTO rear end in a Chevelle?
Yeah, it's a 10 bolt.
Right.
You know, and the Pontiac rear cover is a 10 bolt cover.
Correct.
So at a glance, yeah. it looks similar.
Mm-hmm.
But so the written procedure is no, put it up in the air, find the numbers on the tubes, cross reference them, do a visual check, make sure, and then you can order the parts.
Mm-hmm.
Which can add time to the project because it's great when you can say, hey, I need this done. Yeah, we'll order the stuff. We'll get it here. When the car gets here, we can
right.
work on it. But then when it turns out that it's not the right stuff,
yeah.
then the car's sitting here and then you're ordering the parts anyway.
You're right. And you're burning time returning all the stuff that you ordered. And
right.
it's not a good use of anybody's time.
No. And it's administrative costs for handling it all. And
mm-hmm.
so it's different when we're going to build a car. We're going to build
right.
somebody a custom pro touring Chevelle.
Sure.
Then we know we can order the motor and the trans mm-hmm. and this, you know, maybe a whole chassis or whatever it's mm-hmm. going to be. Or we can start building all that stuff before
right.
the car's over here.
We can spec everything out that we want.
You know,
the rear diff, we can put anything we want that the customer wants in there.
Yeah.
We can go full 9-inch, you know, floating axles, whatever we need.
Yeah, and we can put that order in, you know, again, with a Curry or somebody, and it might, I don't know what their lead time is today, but it could be 2 months or something mm-hmm. or, you know, whatever. But, yeah, that's a thing.
And it is a thing.
It's one of those deals where today, especially in this country, our daily consumer experience is getting faster and faster.
Mm-hmm.
And people are so used to, hey, I'm going to wake up on Tuesday morning, and on Tuesday afternoon, I'm going to go to the hardware store, and Tuesday night, I'm painting my house. And unfortunately, building cars still isn't that responsive.
Correct. Yes, you are 100% correct.
And when you get people that have never done this before, or, you know, just have they've got their own timeline in their mind. And it's like, hey, you know what? I'm going to bring my Chevelle to this shop and I'm going to have him put a posi unit and gears, whatever. And I'm going to give him, you know, they should be able to get this done in a month. No problem.
Yeah, sure.
And then you get there and you find out that, well, it doesn't have the rear end that you thought.
Mm-hmm.
And the gear you want is available, but the gear you want isn't the best gear for it.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to make noise, or it's, we right. know that that one's,
you're not going to be in the right RPM range for what you want to do or any of that stuff.
Well, in gear sets in particular, mm-hmm. if you don't buy a good set today, they're junk. They're going to howl.
Right.
They lose teeth. I mean, we've had all kinds of crazy things happen. So you save yourself $50 on a gear set and it ends up being a big problem. Well, the good ones sometimes take longer to get.
Mm-hmm.
So now all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, sure, parts delays and all the rest. And so the actual labor time might not be, you know, a month.
Right.
But a little flexibility is, and that's our job on the front end, is to chat with the customer.
Yeah, manage expectations. Yeah.
And we have people that say, oh, well, I wanted to be driving this in 3 weeks. And it's like, well, unfortunately, we can't make that happen.
I would love that too.
Yeah. And believe us, it's far better for us to say, you know, I'm sorry, we can't make that happen, then to go, sure, no problem. And then time delay.
Mm-hmm. So. Right. Yeah, when you kind of overcommit like that, it really will tend to bite you pretty much every time.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's the things that are attached to it that go along for the ride. Like, hey, we got your rear axle part, but your upper control arm bushings are shot.
Sure.
And are your lower, and now is the time to consider doing a tubular control arm, and oh, look at that, your springs. And it's not that, again, you know, we're necessarily trying to wring every opportunity out of it.
Right.
But it's on the rack and it's all apart.
Yeah. If not now, when?
Well, yeah. You don't want to do it again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So we're pretty good at raising those points on that initial call rather than down the line.
Sure.
Like, hey, we got it up on the rack. You need to make a decision right now.
Yeah.
You
know? Right.
Don't like to do that.
Yeah. Chew on it for a little while. Get back to us. Yeah. We're going to be here.
But there are things that come up. So, for example, right now, we're working on that 63 Buick LeSabre wagon with repaint on it. Great car.
Oh, love it. Love that car.
And it came in looking pretty straight. And it had a repaint on it already.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't expect it. But as we started to strip some paint off this thing, right in the middle of the hood is a hole.
Oh, boy.
There's a couple of them. And it's like...
Zoinks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody expected that. It's in a weird spot to rust a hole.
Yeah.
It almost looks like it was drilled.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I who knows whatever happened to this thing. Again, 1963 was a long time.
Yeah. Maybe somebody put like a Pep Boys fake air scoop on it or something.
Who knows? Yeah. A tachometer or a light or a...
Yeah.
Anything.
Right.
Maybe it was a taxi cab and it had a medallion on the hood.
I don't know. Oh, man, would that be cool?
But anyway, so it's like, okay, well, that's an unexpected and a phone call. And then you go two ways. It's like the risk analysis of, we can very easily weld that up and grind it and fix it. But on a hood, that's where things like to warp.
Yeah, it's very thin and wide.
And so we could weld it up, but if it does want to twist or wobble or anything, we might have a couple extra hours into straightening it out.
Yeah.
As opposed to flip the other way and say, maybe there's another hood out there.
Uh-huh.
And if we bring another hood in, maybe that one's got a hole in it too.
Maybe.
You don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So what if it's like right under a bracing? The hole is like bondoed right under bracing or over the bracing. You can't even see it anyway. You couldn't be able to tell.
Right. Yeah. So in that case, Jeff, our painter, found it and quickly talked to Joe, our sales and customer guy. And Joe talked to the customer and said, nope, weld it up and
fix it right.
We'll be fine. So you do that. But I guess the takeaway is that it's never a straight line.
That's true.
From A to B. Something always gets in the way. And these are fun little challenges, too. I'm not complaining about them.
Right.
But they're part of the process of building a car that unless you've done it or unless you're in the circle, you might not expect this stuff. And I guess my message is expect the unexpected.
Yeah, I tell you what, since being here, since we're starting to work here, it's really opened my eyes to how not straight of a line it is from A to Z, from the time we receive a car to the time we get it, give it back. There is so much that can go on that's unexpected along the way, and it is... I mean, we end up with a heck of a nice car when we're done. But
We'll get there. Yeah. We never have a question of, are we going to get this right?
Right.
It's just, this is going to add some time.
Sure.
Could add some expense.
Yes.
It's going to change the workflow.
Yep.
We're going to wait for a part. But I will say that parts seem to be flowing better than they have in a long time.
Well, thank you very much.
I was kind of referring to the manufacturers being able to ship stuff.
No. But you were giving me a compliment. Thank you. And I'm going to take it.
Yeah. You're doing a fine job. So that's all good. That, in the pre-pandemic times, things were pretty available and it was nice. We kind
yes.
of took that for granted. Uh-huh. I don't think we're quite there yet. I think a lot of items got discontinued in that time frame.
Yeah, it's happened. I've seen a few things be discontinued. And I'll tell you what, I have noticed, even from the time I started here till today, which has been, I started May of 2023, I seem to see a pretty good success rate of things being in stock rather than when I first started.
Yeah, so right.
I do see an uptick in availability.
And that's good.
That's great.
Yeah. We like that a lot. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I remember you telling me stories in the before times when all this started going down, how long you're having to wait for some things. I mean, it was just incredible.
It was a mess.
Yeah.
And it caused a huge ripple effect.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you come to the shop and look around and every car is waiting for something.
Oh, brother. Poor Brian must have been ripping his hair out.
Well, he was, and it makes you have to look at projects differently, and it just, you know, if your mindset is that today we're going to work on the front end of this car, and you get into it, and then you find you need something, and you have to wait for it. If it's in your home garage, you might say, well, fine, I'll just put it up on blocks and wait.
Mm-hmm.
And in our case, a lot of times, like, well, we're going to put a pin in that, and now we're going to get going on the rear suspension, mm-hmm. and wait for the other side to come in, you know, and just press on. So it just depends what it was.
Right. Right. But another thing I brought up, I was talking yesterday to Brian and Trevor, that since I started working here, and I've been a car guy my whole life, since I started working here, I had no idea how much I didn't know. I mean, it is amazing the nuance and minutiae that you can get into with just like a small block Chevy. Brian and I were talking about it yesterday. You know, one piece remain or two piece remain seal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, center bolt cap or on the perimeter. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have the oil pan bracing and all kinds of things that just matter a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that you just have to know. And by golly, I'm picking up some good core memories on stuff.
It is true, and I'm reminded of how much I don't know every day. Because exactly, you think you know something, and in my world, more so on the technology side of things, just when I think we get something dialed in, everything changes, mm-hmm. and then you got to learn it all over again.
Yeah.
So like. This morning, for example, I was in the process of kind of revamping the homepage of our V8SpeedShop.com website.
Cool.
And the content really didn't change. Like if you're a fairly reasonable human, yesterday you would have read this and you would have said, oh, yeah, this is a restoration shop that builds custom cars mm-hmm. and builds hot rods and oh, look, they're hiring, and here's where you click to see the build photos, and here's where you click to watch the videos and whatever. But the difference today, it still says all the same things, but just in a different way.
Sure.
Because Google and the search engines of the world have changed the way they read stuff.
Aha.
And if you want to be ahead of everybody else, or at least get a reasonable return on a search, you got to make it easy for the systems to find.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So phrases got tuned up a little bit, placement of things, different formatting and
all right.
yada, yada, yada. So that, again, any human would see the same thing essentially, but the Skynet needed it differently so we don't get ignored.
Our digital overlords have spoken.
Right. And so, you know, that was 8 hours of my life that I didn't expect to have to do again. Mm-hmm. But I know I'm going to have to do this again probably in, who knows, you know, mm-hmm. 6 months, because it's all going to change again.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Good times.
Well, as long as it nets some returns.
Sure.
It's not such a bad thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Keeps your mind going. Let you, you know, yeah. come up with different ways to do things. So, yeah. So good stuff.
Putting off that withering of my noggin as long as possible.
Right. That's right. You keep your mind active. Keeps you fresh.
So you were mentioning this potential trivia question answer that could have been perhaps mythical city.
We'll find out soon.
El Dorado. I'm reminded of the Detroit Autorama that's going on right now as we record this.
Oh, right on.
Home of the Riddler Award.
Yes.
And one of the contenders is a 67 Eldorado.
Is that right?
And it's cool to see, because here's another one, and I'm not saying this was my idea, but I had this idea in probably 1995.
Mm.
And I didn't have the means or the means to build the car, but they did a rear drive conversion.
Oh, no kidding.
On an Eldorado, yeah. So the 67, 89, 70, all the way up to 76, 77 Eldorados were front drive.
Right.
With the Caddy 472 mm-hmm. 500 engine. And the trivia question, what transmission?
Oh, stop it. I don't know.
And what was special about it? Oh, man, I could bank that one.
You can. Well, I won't look it up either after this.
So it was the Turbo 425.
Ah, okay.
Which is the, because the engine's
launched. The Tornado used that as well, right?
Yeah. The engine's longitudinal.
Right.
It doesn't pitch the engine sideways right. to make the front drive. It's the long way. And then it does a 90 inside the transmission. And it's actually a chain drive inside there.
Oh, wow.
Big chain.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Big, heavy chain.
Yeah, sure.
But anyway, this particular car, they put on some kind of a chassis, and they also shortened it because those Eldorados, they're very sleek looking, but they have a pretty decent overhang in the front and
right.
the back, and they pinched it all.
Hmm.
And in the version that I had in my mind, it had a little bit of that. I was envisioning a black one with, you know, like a Caddy. You know, at the time, there wasn't, this was pre-LS and LT when I was thinking about this. But then we mentioned the Round 6 podcast at the beginning of the show. One of the guys on that is Brian Stupski with Problem Child Customs
and Correct.
Studio PCK Design. He had penned a rear drive Eldorado, a blue one.
Oh, really?
In 2013, 14, something like that. So it was 10 years ago. Did a rendering. It was awesome. And I saw that, and he released the rendering because there was a customer somewhere that was going to have that car built, and then they bailed on it. So then he shared it, you know, because a lot of times if you hire a designer, you know, you don't want your...
Yeah, you don't want your design out there design. Before you get the car made, yeah.
Right. So whoever this person was said, hey, I'm not going to do this, so we can, you know, you can share it. So he shared it, and I latched onto it immediately. It was blue. It was killer looking. And our good friend, Mr. Albert Melchior, also saw it. And Albert does a lot of carbon fiber body panels for first generation Ooh. Firebird Trans Am custom work. He's up in Canada. And I think we both commented on this this picture that Stupski posted of this Eldorado. And Albert and I got to talking, and he's like, if you find one, I'll have you guys build it.
Albert, baby. Right. All right.
And I think, if I remember correctly, he actually ended up with a car that might have been a family member of his. And it was like too nice to cut up. So
oh, then, really?
So then the project kind of cooled off and life goes on. Well, today, here we are in 2024. And at Cobo Hall in Detroit, one of the grade 8 cars going for the Riddler is a rear drive Eldo.
Mm, interesting.
And it's done in
That's crazy.
A cream color. With a bay or a kind of a brownish tan interior, not the colors I would have gone with. The car is really, really amazing. I'm not taking anything from the car, But once again, certain cars to me have body lines that almost demand a metallic color so that the light does its magic on the body lines. And this one is a very solid color. It's okay. It looks like it's carved out of ice cream, basically.
That's cool.
It's neat. And then the trim is painted and the bumpers and everything. So there's no, chrome or bright work on it. A little bit in the grill, maybe. But it was cool to see. And it was designed by Ben Hermance, our buddy Ben, who also has done several car designs for us over the years, including our very first one, the Royal Sport Camaro.
Is that right?
It was Ben Hermance's design.
All right, Ben.
Yeah, he's a good dude. I really enjoyed working with Ben because he was one of the few people that would tell me to go pound sand if I had a bad idea.
That's a nice way to put it.
Well, and you need that, for the good of whatever the project is. He's like, no, you don't want to do that. That's dumb. Okay.
All right, fine.
Yeah. So a lot of interesting cars in the Grade 8. There's a Kindig Corvette. It's like a 53, 54 body, I think, but done in a fastback hardtop kind of thing.
Interesting.
So differently than because those were all roadsters back then. There's a, it looks like a 63 Impala maybe. And then our friend, JF, Longier, he's French, Canadian, did a fantasy car and I think it's a 67 Cougar with the 67 Mustang fastback rear glass. And
interesting.
So the Cougar, of course, was the notchback version of that platform. And, the Mustang was the fastback.
Sure.
And at first glance, it's like, yeah, cool Mustang. But then all of a sudden you see it's got the, what they call the electric shaver front end.
Yes.
And the Cougar taillights and everything. And it's beautiful and it's really well done. And it looks like a, obviously a lot nicer, but it looks like a factory built. The car that they should have built from the factory. And he's very creative and did a fictitious magazine ad for it and everything.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So that was really cool. That's definitely a contender. Then there's another Corvette Roadster and then that Cadillac and I think a 56 Chevy. And then there's a 57 Plymouth in there also that's all matted out and same color and whole thing. So it's cool to see. Always like the Riddler Award winners and the Grade 8 cars.
Sure.
Of course, these are the big requirement of that show is you can't ever show these things in public before the show.
Oh, not aware of that.
Yeah. That's why it's always a big surprise.
That's pretty cool.
It's cool and
it's got to be maddening to the people who own the cars.
Well, it's maddening to everybody.
Yeah, sure.
And the reason for it is if you're building a car at that level, we're talking super high dollar cars. Sometimes you get support from manufacturers that are making things for you or you're using certain parts and you can't tell anybody. So if you're looking at helping a builder out as a marketing thing, you have to wait till that car is done before anybody knows what parts are on it.
Oh, man.
It could be 10 years.
Holy cats.
Some of these things take a long time to build.
Gee whiz.
So the other thing is with social, what if somebody comes to your shop and snaps a couple pictures of it and throws it up on the Facebook and all of a sudden, you're out of the running.
That's a problem, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I imagine that has to be kept pretty secret.
Yeah. And how fun is that?
Yeah. No fun.
To build one. So that's been a point of contention with that event. And we'll see. I mean, I guess I totally understand that they really want that shock value. That they really want to, that's a crowd draw. It's like, let's go to that show and see what's going to happen. We don't know.
Yeah, that's actually cool. You got to be there. You got to be there to see it.
Or
unless somebody's streaming it.
Yeah, unless, during the setup is when all the pictures normally come out.
Oh, is that right? Today, man.
On social, you'll see them as they're happening. Well, so we'll have to see what the winners are once again. But those are some pretty innovative cars when you get to that level.
Yeah, pretty heavy duty stuff, I imagine.
Yeah.
I've never been to the Detroit Autorama.
It's a good show.
Yeah. Been to the Cleveland Autorama a few times when I was a kid.
There you go.
But not the Detroit.
A little different.
Yeah, a little bit, I imagine. I don't think they have cool awards like they do in the Detroit Autorama.
Well, I think the great thing is that we have all these different shows and all these different opportunities to go see stuff. Mm-hmm. So between Autorama, I'm super excited. Again, the Triple Crown of Rotting this coming September.
Right.
Was a killer show last year, and it's only going to be better this year.
Sweet.
There's, you know, down the line with all the different Good Guys events, and, you know, Holly's still doing all their different events. I don't know if they're doing as many this year, maybe not, but every weekend, you know, you can probably find something cool to do.
Yeah, sure. If not one of those national shows, just something in your local community is probably going to be happening. I mean, just a cruise night that your local municipality may hold.
For sure.
Yeah, so those are pretty cool.
Yeah, and we're all getting spring fever right now because
we are.
Time's coming.
Yeah, it is. I'm looking forward to some GTO cruising and some road tripping.
That's it. So because we've been fairly frequent with these podcasts, I'm guessing nothing has happened.
Nothing has happened. Absolutely nothing.
Which is okay.
It has a few more items placed on it as it becomes a shelf now and again. But,
oh, man.
But nothing constructive has happened to it. So
as long as nothing destructive has happened.
No, nothing destructive. And I have a few projects I need to complete before I really wring it out. But I got to...
Where are you going to pull the motor again?
No. I got the main AC plenum
right.
that I need to connect. I got to replace that trans pan that Yardley gave me with a factory pan. Mm-hmm. Try to stop the transmission pan from leaking. I want to replace the valve cover gaskets because I got a leak behind one of those. You can smell some oil burning every so often. Those are the three main things. Oh, and I need to replace the clutch on the AC compressor.
Yeah.
So those four things, those are my four big things I have to do.
Oh, so,
it's not too bad.
That's a weekend.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Well, I'm pretty excited because we have a pretty cool GTO project going now.
We do. I am super excited about this car.
Yeah. So this is a 1967 GTO, similar to yours.
Mm-hmm.
The customer is very interesting because he's not from the U.S., but watched the video of the restoration of the blue 1967 GTO we did a few years ago.
Yep.
That ended up scoring really high at the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals. And we did the whole car. And the theme of that video is the car looked like it got dragged out of a swamp.
It really did. It was a swamp thing.
It was different colors and it was, you know, barnacled and rusty. Mm-hmm. And we ended up turning it into a show winner. You know,
it's crazy how nice that car turned out.
Big dramatic transformation.
Yep.
Well, this gentleman is Mr. Tez Barshim, who is a multi-Olympic gold medalist and world champion high jumper from the Middle East and just a total car guy.
Yep.
And a very nice guy. In fact, if you are interested, you can find one of his events on YouTube where he literally shared a gold medal with another competitor.
That was unbelievable. The amount of character that takes to do that.
It really is.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, and you know, we all meet different people through the course of our lives that say stuff or do stuff or whatever. But here's a guy who literally, because his friend was competing against him, and he felt his friend was just as deserving, and they competed at the same level essentially.
Yeah,
that he said, "No, we'll split it." That's amazing.
I don't know if I'll hear about that ever again, that somebody wants to split their gold medal with somebody.
I'm not aware of it ever happening before that, but I'm not a historian of the Olympiad. But,
right.
But anyway, just a great, great guy. And one night I was on Instagram, just putting a picture up on our Instagram page, and we got a message from him. And he said, "Hey, I've got a GTO, and I watched that video. Can you build mine?" And we went, "Sure."
Yes, you know? All day yes.
And a lot of times you don't know anything about who these people are that contact you until you follow up with them. But I'm looking at the name and I'm like, "Huh, I think I've seen that name before."
Yeah.
And sure enough, it's him. So he sent the car to us. We'd never met in person, and this white 67 GTO shows up, And here we are. We weren't really sure what the plan was that we were going to do with the car yet. And his team is like, no. Once you get it, you'll see. You'll
yeah.
Look at it and figure it out. So we did some inspections on it and found out that it definitely needs some help.
It does need a little bit of help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his goal. So eventually, our team ended up chatting with him. So that was actually today.
Yeah. I was in the room for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wasn't. So how'd that go?
Went well. I mean, he is the nicest guy in the world.
Nice.
Yeah. He's amazing.
Well, he's the highest jumping guy in the world.
He certainly is. He certainly is. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they just went over what the car is, what it's going to need, what his wants are. He is so agreeable to whatever needs to happen to make it just as nice as that blue 67 GTO. That's really what he's modeling his car after.
Wow.
Yeah, so he's in it.
What's he going to do with it?
He's just going to drive it, I think. Yeah, it's going to be in storage for part of the year when he's out doing his Olympic stuff and Olympic training and things like that. Mm-hmm. But then when he gets into it, when he gets back to it, he wants to be able to get in, turn the key, and go.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
So I'm sensing some modern upgrades here and there.
Yes, we talked about a modern engine with fuel injection.
That's code for LS, friends.
It did come out, and he was agreeable to that.
Yeah, that's hard for
those. So that's great.
Hard for those Pontiac guys to say those letters. But great solution for the car. It's not actually a GTO.
That's correct.
It's a Le Mans.
It is,
and it's a non-original motor. So I mean, you can do whatever you want with this.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, it's definitely been cloned, and whoever did it just kind of did it.
Yeah, and we were pretty quick to pick up on that. So, but that's great. And he's definitely a car guy.
He is, for sure.
And what I really like is here's yet another example of you put all the different cultures of the world aside. The one thing we all agree on is cool cars are cool.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. And I was going over the notes, and it seems he's also a big music fan. He wants a good stereo.
Yes, he does want a good stereo. Yeah, Joe was talking to him about that. He asked Joe, who do you like to listen to when you're in the car?
Yeah.
And he told him, because he says, I like to put the sound system together. Who do you like to listen to? That's going to kind of help me dictate what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And he gave his answer. He's like, all right, I know what we're doing.
What kind of music is he into, do we know?
He likes, I think he likes Jay-Z and a lot of hip-hop.
Nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's his
gig, yeah.
I'd imagine, you know, being a high energy guy like that.
Sure. Well, that's a high jumping, high energy guy.
There you go.
Hey.
Air Tez. So I think it's fantastic. And not only because, you know, we have this opportunity to really turn this car around and build something for a customer who knows what they want and appreciates it. But I'm also always honored and intrigued to be around people that are the tops at what they do.
Yes, you are.
I every once in a while I get the opportunity, maybe at the SEMA show, to do an interview with somebody who, you know, is at the top of their game, like Antron Brown was one of the greats, or this past year Tim Tebow, or you mm-hmm. know. Ed Iskandarian, you know, a car yep. guy, whatever. And I don't have a whole lot of experience with Olympic champions. And there are those who would say, let me rephrase it. I think my view of the Olympics is I don't look at it as the different countries competing.
Mm-hmm.
I really look at the Olympics as individuals against themselves, mostly.
No, I see. I get that. Sure.
Because when you watch Olympic coverage, you always see like gold, silver, bronze medalists. They're all hugging each other at the end,
mm-hmm.
you know, when it's an individual type sport.
Sure.
Of course, you've got some of the great rivalries like the, you know, the hockey game between the U.S. and the Russians.
Oh, that was so great.
and of course, the, you know, the American Dream Team basketball mm-hmm. team with Jordan and every MVP that we had, you
right,
know,
right,
playing basketball against a bunch of people who didn't have a chance. Sorry,
sorry, world.
Yeah. So there's that, but I don't like it when it becomes political.
Yes, that is a pretty big downer.
And when you have countries that they go to make statements,
yeah,
and they kind of ride on the back of their athletes, and the athletes are the ones doing the work.
Yeah, it takes the purity away from it all.
It does. Yeah. And it's, to me, it's very insulting to these people who have dedicated literally their entire life and every piece of energy they have to be the best at something, and then to have a political stank over it. To me, it's just not cool. You know?
Right. No one likes a stank.
No. So hopefully I get the opportunity to chat with Tez and maybe some of his insights, his drive, his outlook, his attitude, his ability to pursue a higher level trickles down to all of us.
That'd be cool. And that'll be a great conversation.
Yeah, sure. It's going to be a cool car.
It's going to be a great car. Yeah.
Lots of other cool cars in the shop at the moment. The variety is kind of, again, all over the place, including a particular 79 Dodge van right now.
Oh, yes. I saw that Dodge van today. That was pretty... That's getting some love done to it.
Yeah, it's getting a few upgrades. Mm-hmm. The exhaust was about to fall off, so we're putting some pipes on it. Mm-hmm. And finally getting a backup camera.
Yeah, and God, it needs it. Holy cow, that's like backing up a building.
With a lot of curtains.
Yeah, exactly.
An apartment building.
Yes, yes, exactly.
A rolling rumpus room. So Kelly had gotten me a backup camera for Christmas last year for the van, and she hasn't driven the thing yet.
Really?
But is a little put off by the fact you can't see anything behind you. So,
yeah.
So this will take care of that.
Good.
And so just a few of these details, fixing the air conditioner on it and a couple things. Mm-hmm. But there's two additions that are kind of fun. Nostalgia makes people do silly things, and my first van, and you can scroll back a few episodes of V8 Radio if you want to hear this whole story. But the first one we had when I was a kid had a very particular horn. It had an air horn system that was these two plastic red trumpets that were mounted at the bottom of the hood with a little compressor. And you'd hit the horn and these horns would blow. And it's not like the train horns of today.
Right.
And it wasn't a deep tone like a barge.
Right.
Yep, and it was just two little high-pitched horns that you would think. I always thought like a Fiat Spider or something, you know, like a 124 or an Alfa Romeo, that kind of horn. And the van that I obtained a year and a half ago or so had the stock Dodge horn, which was, you know, a horn car horn.
Right, dual note horn.
So I actually found a set of those. They're an Italian made horn, the little red plastic ones. So those are being installed to reconnect that experience. But the other kind of cool victory was that, and this is such a goofy story, but the first van that we had a Craig brand R3 road rated receiver.
Not an R2, an R3.
Correct. R2 just would have been road rated.
Yes.
Road rated receiver. Yes. Those three R's. And it was a cassette deck, and it was from 1980, 81. It had, you know, it's two knobs and a cassette deck,
right,
and it's analog stuff, no digital display or anything. I remember driving this thing around in high school thinking how much that radio sucked.
And you couldn't wait to have another one now.
Well, that's the weird thing.
I can't wait to have a crappy radio in this van.
Well, Woo! You know, back then it only puts out a few watts and it didn't, you know, it didn't get real loud. It didn't sound that great. So I was like, you know, someday I'm going to have an Alpine system or something, you know.
It's going to rock.
It's going to rock. Yeah. I envisioned like the whole Grateful Dead wall of sound.
Yes.
Like, right behind the front seat.
Amen.
You know, well, here I get this other van and it's got kind of a no-name Japanese AM/FM 8-track player in it.
Mm, interesting.
Which works perfectly. It's amazing. Right. Well, I haven't tried the 8-track, but the radio, the volume knob doesn't crackle or nothing. I mean, it's like pristine. But I found myself reaching over and looking for the feel of the knobs of that old Craig radio.
No way.
Like this is missing from this dashboard.
It's crazy how muscle memory works, right?
It is weird. So I did a little eBay search one day, and of course I couldn't. There was one that was similar that looked like it came out of a junkyard. It was like missing the bezel, and one of the buttons was gone.
Balderdash. You can't have that.
No. But I created a saved search on eBay, and pretty soon I start getting emails like, "Hey, this Craig thing popped up," and one of them is some guy in England who sells car literature. He basically razor knives ads out of magazines and sells them page by page. And every day, and there's some kind of strategy here, because every day I would get the same product, the same magazine ad sale listing sent to me, but each day it was a different price.
No kidding.
So the guy would add 20 cents today. Tomorrow it's down 30. It's like a...
So it's like a new ad?
Yeah, he relists it, changes the price. And I've heard that's a thing. There are people that constantly revise pricing until the right price hits, you know?
Huh. Okay.
I don't know. It's kind of a waste of time to me. But, but these were coming in and I wasn't really paying attention to it. And then yesterday, all of a sudden, boom, the Craig T641, I think, AM/FM cassette radio, new in the box.
Oh, man.
Appears in my... and, boy, my finger still hurts from hitting the buy it now. So I was like,
oh, my God.
Don't let anybody else get it.
Can I buy it twice? Can I buy it twice?
Well, you know, like there's a high demand.
Yeah, right. Oh, my gosh. Oh, their fight or flight probably kicked. Like,
Oh, you know it. Because there's exactly zero people in the world.
Right. Zero watchers.
Looking for this, because it's not a collectible thing. It doesn't sound good. It's not high tech. It's not limited. Mm-hmm. It's nothing.
Right.
But I had to have it.
Mm-hmm. Somebody had that squirreled away in a closet for 30 years, and they probably found it or maybe cleaned out their parents' house. Maybe they passed or grandparents'
43 years.
And they said, what the hell are we going to do with this? Put it on eBay. See if we can get a couple bucks for it.
They said, that Oste guy.
Yeah. Needs you know what? This. Somebody's going to want this. And they were right.
And they were right. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing was I purchased it, and with shipping, I think it came to $88.73 or something.
A bargain at twice the price.
but on the I don't have it yet. It should be here tomorrow. But on the box is the vintage Walmart price tag sticker.
No way.
That was like $88.70. I mean, I paid what the guy paid for it new.
Right.
So that was not a good investment.
Not on his part, no.
Storing it for 43 years.
Yeah. More. Yeah. Oh, well. His loss is your gain.
For sure.
Yeah.
So now I will be able to install that and then reach over and feel that knob the same way. And
just takes you right back, doesn't it?
And again, it's silly, but it's a thing.
It is a thing.
It's a lot of what we do here, you know, is connect people with those great times that they've had with cars.
And through things with radio knobs.
That's it. and a similar story is I also picked up the same CB radio that the old van had.
Nice.
So piece by piece, it's all kind of coming together. And again, I'm not, you know, I'm not living in the past and like, you know, being nuts about it. But it's just creating a familiarity that I don't have anymore.
Sure.
The house I grew up in is gone. And, you know, my dad's not with us anymore. Mm-hmm. But if I sit in that thing, I can almost hear him yelling at me.
Good times.
Yeah. Tell me, why'd you break the radio?
Yeah. Sorry, Dad.
And I guess the other lesson is, yes, somebody wants it. Mm-hmm. I don't care what you got. Somebody wants it. Not me. I already got all the junk now.
Right. You got all the stuff now. Yeah. Somebody is that the last piece of nostalgia you need for that van?
As far as things to, you know, to seek out and find, yes, for the most part. I do want to build an overhead console for it.
That
was similar.
To put the CB in, right?
Yeah. But between the radio and the CB and the wheels were a big thing. And, you know, it's got in the horn. It's got all the same junk now, so that's good.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's killer, man. I like seeing you, you know, find these things from your past and really kind of get them back up to where they were. I mean, again, you're not living in the past. It's just kind of recapturing some of the past. That's all.
Well, and I will admit that the hunt is fun.
Sure. The hunt is everything almost.
Yeah. It's fun to seek this stuff out and find it. And it's pretty thrilling when the thing shows up in the email box. Mm-hmm. Because if you remember the story of the whole van itself, it appeared in my email box, mm-hmm. and I almost did the same thing. I almost had a heart attack. That here's the almost twin brother to the van that we used to have. And yeah. I'm like, I gotta have it, you know?
Yeah, built in the same place, probably by the same, painted by the same guy.
Yeah, same month.
Same month, definitely painted by the same guy.
Yeah, both November 1978.
That's too crazy. And for it to be in that nice a shape, too.
Yeah, it's crazy. Crazy is a good word.
Yeah.
But anyway, so maybe the next report will be, you know, how all that stuff works. And maybe I'll be frustrated at that point and be looking for an Alpine to put in it. So he sounds like crap, man.
This is utter nonsense.
Yes. You know what else is utter nonsense?
Tell me.
It's our trivia questions.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's unleash the answers here. Ooh. So, Kevin, I asked you, in what mythical city that's said to be filled with gold did Cadillac name a car model after it for its golden anniversary? And you answered El Dorado. And although I kept a pretty good poker face while you're answering that question, you are correct.
Hey.
It is the Cadillac El Dorado. So, congratulations. The front-wheel drive magic machine.
Nice.
Yeah, well, good stuff.
Finally got one right.
Well, you know, you were due.
Okay, so I asked you, what, according to the Internet Movie Car Database, is the most popular car in movies? And you said...
Popular appearing car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you said the Batmobile.
Yeah.
And then I said, let me make sure you understand the question. Yeah. What's the most popular car in movies? And you said, the Batmobile. Okay. So I tried, but
there's no helping me.
Unfortunately, that is incorrect. The most popular car in movies is the Ford Crown Victoria.
Oh.
And they actually have a rolling count of how many of these things appeared in films. And
I was thinking like a themed movie car or something.
I know, and I tried.
God bless it.
I tried.
Come on, man.
So between police cars and taxi cabs and, you know, family cars, the Ford Crown Vic appears more than anything in films.
Well, well, well.
I can give you you can guess on number two if you want.
The number two, Chevy Impala.
That's actually number five.
Is so that right?
According to this, the Volkswagen Golf is number two.
Really?
Yeah, and then the Toyota Corolla. But I don't know. I just don't notice those, I guess, in films. But I don't know if they're counting like every car in the background and you see
right.
a scene in New York City. It's like, well, there's 25,000 Corollas right there. So I don't know.
All right. Well, I totally still, even though you try to help me with that question, still misunderstood it. So I deserve the loss on that one.
I don't even deserve it, but... Yeah.
But I sure got it.
Well, at least you got to talk about the Batmobile for
a minute. Yeah, woo-woo.
Always fun, yeah. So, well, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
And today here at the shop was also Employee Team Member Appreciation Day.
Yes, it was. A nice little pizza party.
How about that?
That's good stuff.
That was fun, so thanks to our team for putting that together.
Yeah, man. It was awesome.
So you got to come down for a lot. And tonight, we're going to do a little simulated racing.
Yeah, a little something-something, yeah.
After
be great.
Yeah, a little one of our guys, Toby, our detailer and restoration technician, brought in a video game racing simulator. So we're going to do some racing.
Dig it.
So a lot of stuff happens when you come to town, man.
Well, you know, you got to keep me entertained. You got to keep me interested.
Apparently.
Yeah. I'm high maintenance.
So if you were entertained all the way to this part of the show, you can hit the subscribe button and get the next one appearing in the mailbox. And I don't know when that's going to be because we've been banging them out, but we'll certainly see. And if you do subscribe, you'll know right away. Just
right
like
on.
That. And that's pretty much all I got for this one. I know there's... We got some great topics coming up.
Yep.
For sure. Don't know what they are, but I'm going to do that. I'm just going to say that.
I don't know what they are either. I'm just going to agree with you.
See? It's going to be awesome.
Oh, man, I can't wait for these great topics.
Right. So we encourage you to subscribe and join us. Leave us a review, too, if you want to share some thoughts. That's pretty much all I got. So
pretty much all I got. I got to get my keister back to work.
Yeah, you do. So.
And I'm not kidding, Q.
Yeah. For Mr. Mike Q-Ball Clark, I'm Kevin Ostey. Thanks for listening to V8 Radio. And we are reminding you to keep the hammer down and the fun up. And we will talk to you next time on V8 Radio.
Boom, bam, pow.